Impact of Influence, the tragic story of a powerful South Carolina family and the mysterious deaths they are linked to. So glad you're joining us again, first-timers. Welcome. We love it that you have been sharing this and giving in this lovely five-star reviews. I am Matt Harris. She is Seton Tucker. Good day, Seton. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good, good. It's a big episode because we are talking to an ER doctor later in this episode, and he's going to comment on the few pages that were released by Alex's attorneys about the September 14th shooting and his head wound. So we're going to dive into that with an ER doctor. And that's pretty cool because there's been a lot of questions about that, whether it was real, fake, this or that, or could it happen? ER doctor will give his opinion. But we begin with the 911 calls on September 4th. And we want to start with the witness. So we will begin with that. Again, this is the day, September 4th. If you're just joining us, what happened on that day was Alec Murdoch reported that he had been shot by someone helping him as he had a flat tire. We later find out that according to Alec, Alec says he hired Eddie Smith to shoot him in a suicide for hire pact, get $10 million for his son, Buster. And Eddie says that's not the way it went down. You can listen to our previous episodes to get deets on that. But let's begin. Here is September 4th call to 911 by some people who saw Alec on the side of the road.
Hampton County 911, where is your emergency?
Yes, we're on Sakahatchee Road, and there is a man on the side of the road with blood all over him, and he's waving his hands.
He just laying there, waving his hands around?
Fine. He looks fine, but it kind of looks like a setup, so we didn't stop.
Oh, I don't blame you. What area of Sakahatchee Road are you on?
All I can tell you is we're like halfway down Sakahatchee Road.
Well, let me get my deputies in that area to see what's going on. Could you give me a description of that male?
I'm going to say he's probably in his 40s.
Okay.
He's not very large, but he's kind of heavy set. White hair, and it's a black, some kind of SUV, like a smaller Kia SUV or something.
Uh-huh. Kia. And it stopped where he's at?
Say what?
You said that SUV is stopped where he's at?
I couldn't understand what you said.
The SUV is right where he's at as well?
He's pulled over on the side of the road. There's no damage to the SUV.
Mm-hmm.
The caution light's on.
Okay.
The trunk of it was open.
Okay. All right. Well, let me get my deputies headed to that area. What's your name and a good contact number for you? I have my deputies headed out that way, okay?
All right.
So thank you. No problem.
A couple of takeaways from that. One is they say there is blood all over him, though he looks fine.
Yeah, they say he didn't appear to be injured.
And because he's bloody. And they say it looks like a setup, which I assume they're referring to, for those who don't know, this road is very rural. We both have been down at Seton and I when we were down there looking around in this case. And you could see how someone might think, okay, when they say it's a setup, as in they're going to pull over and then someone's going to carjack us or something
right,
like
someone's
that.
Right, someone's going to jump out and rob them.
Now, Alex is going to be happy that he said he was in his 40s because Alex in his 50s. And Alex's not going to be happy because he said it was a Kia, but it was actually a
Mercedes.
He's like, why did I pay for the Mercedes when they think it looks like a Kia? So he, there's blood all over him. They say the trunk is open. That's another thing worth mentioning because that's when Alec was trying to make it look like a flat tire. Maybe he was fixing the tire.
But he's waving his hands around and, you know, just seemed suspicious to them, so much so that they did not want to pull over and assist him.
And we should also point out that we did a little bit of editing on that one, only because they go through a lot of trying to figure out where on Sakahatchee Road they were and specifically which location. And so I don't think you needed to go through all that. So we just want to let you be very clear that we did edit a little bit. Now, we did not edit any of this first Alec Murdoch call to 911 on September 4th. Let's hear that.
Okay, 911, what is your emergency?
On Saucahatchee Road.
Okay, what's the address on Saucahatchee Road?
I'm by the church.
What church? What church are you talking about?
I don't know the name of it, with the red roof.
Okay, what end of Saucahatchee Road? Because I don't know what you're talking about.
At the Hampton County side.
Okay, what's going on?
I got a flat tire,
mm-hmm.
And I stopped, and somebody stopped to help me. And when I turned my back, they tried to shoot me.
Oh, okay. Were you shot?
Yes, but okay. I mean, I'm okay.
You shot where? Where were you shot at?
Huh?
Did they actually shoot you, or they tried to shoot you?
They shot me, but...
Okay, wait, you need EMS?
Yes, I can't drive.
Okay.
I'm having trouble seeing, and I'm bleeding a lot.
What part of your body?
I'm not sure. Somewhere on my head.
Your head?
Somewhere on my head. Somebody just stopped for me, ma'am. For 911.
Okay. Still?
Hey.
Okay, let me speak to him, see if he can tell me exactly where you are.
Okay,
and what's your name? I'm still here. I'm still on the line with you. What's your name?
Alex Murdoch.
Alex Murdoch?
Yes, ma'am.
And you see, you were driving, you got a flat tire, somebody stopped to help you, and they shot you?
Well, they pulled over, yes, ma'am, like they were going to help me.
Okay, stay on the line with me. We're going to get some.
I'm bleeding pretty bad.
Okay.
St. John's Missionary Church.
St. John's Missionary Church?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And can you give me a description of the person that shot you or shot at you?
Yes, ma'am. I mean, it was a white fella. I'd say
a white male,
a fair amount younger than me. Really, really short hair. You have an ambulance coming, ma'am?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Stay on the line. I got them on the way.
You think one of y'all can drive me to the hospital?
Yes, sir. You want to get the trunk, though, because I got a baby I need to get on the back.
One of y'all can get in this car and drive me?
Yes, sir. I can.
They're going to drive me to the hospital. Ma'am? Ma'am?
I'm still here, sir. They're on the way. Don't hang up.
Okay, that was unedited. We left everything in on that call. He got disconnected. He calls back, and we'll get to that in a moment. Seton, takeaways?
Okay, so what seemed really strange for me is that he doesn't really mention that he was shot until almost a minute into that conversation.
She doesn't ask, though.
No, she doesn't ask. For 48 seconds... You know, he seems really calm for someone who has just been shot in the head. Also, the obvious, the description of Eddie doesn't match what he tells the 911.
That's probably on purpose when we look back, right?
Right.
Now that we know that he claims he paid Eddie. So he has really, really short hair, overcompensated for the fact that Eddie has long hair.
He seems really calm, but he also doesn't sound like someone who is wanting to commit suicide. I mean, he's asking for an ambulance. He says he's bleeding pretty badly, you know, he's seeking medical attention. That doesn't seem like someone who's necessarily wanting to kill themselves.
Well, at that point, let's play the devil's advocate, whatever. They say that he's very high. When I say they, his attorneys say he was very high that day. He also had Smitty attempt the suicide deal, but if it doesn't go right,
well,
then he's got to go along with the story at that point.
And lots of people try to kill themselves and then change their minds midway through. But I also thought it was interesting that someone actually did stop. I mean, we heard the first caller who was definitely, things seemed off to that caller and they did not want to stop. This person actually did stop. And so I think there were a lot of questions about this mystery Good Samaritan who stopped. But now from the 911 call, it does appear that this person actually does exist.
What is a side note weird thing to me is that they're going to drive him. He says a young lady was driving to the hospital, white Nissan Rogue. It's a very nice young lady, but I assume you would want an ambulance to come. They never tell you to, like, if you see somebody injured on the side of the road, throw them in the back of your car and drive them to a hospital.
Well, I think they were so rural that maybe they just felt like it was taking so long for the ambulance to get there they needed to get somewhere more quickly than they didn't want to wait on the ambulance. But I do think most people would just wait on the ambulance.
Right. I don't do blood in my car, and you don't look like it's life-threatening. But so he gets disconnected. Do you want to go to the third call now after they lost connection and he's got the young lady driving to the hospital in a Nissan Rogue? We did edit a little bit of this one, just a little bit, because there's a lot of silence and it seems to be a little disorganized or confused as to who's, like, the operator is talking to the ambulance. I think she's talking to police.
Hear other people in the background talking, other operators. So it's just a lot of dead space.
So we just took some of that out, but nothing that Alec was saying or nothing that was important to the call. It was just downtime or the 911 operator talking to services to get him out here. But here's the rest of that call.
Is it current?
Yeah, it should be current. Is it? Okay, now it is.
911, where's your emergency?
Yes, ma'am, I lost you. This young lady is driving me to the hospital.
She's carrying you to the hospital?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, and who is this?
This is Alec Murdoch. I was on the phone a minute ago.
Okay, all right. Okay. He said that somebody's taking him to the hospital. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Look, we got a flat tire.
Got
to 10-12. Ma'am, I need the ambulance.
You need the ambulance? Okay. Are you still in the same location?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Which way are y'all heading? Are y'all driving down the road?
No, ma'am. I got a flat tire.
Okay. All right. Sit tight right there, okay?
Ma'am?
Okay. Yes, sir. We're still here. We're still here. Hold on. We're dispatching now, giving them information. Where are you at?
I
want
to get this all over your car. All right. Now they're taking me to the hospital.
Okay. So which way are y'all traveling?
We're coming down Saucahatchee Road to the Hampton Hospital.
Y'all coming down Saucahatchee?
Ma'am?
Y'all coming down Saucahatchee Road to your to the hospital?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. They said that they're coming down Saucahatchee Road heading towards the hospital. But
all right, we're going to keep EMS en route to you, okay?
Okay.
Are you coming off of Walterboro Highway?
We'll be at Walterboro Highway in 10 minutes or so.
They said in about 10 minutes or so they'll be at Walterboro Highway.
They're here.
Okay.
I'm going to hang up, ma'am.
Okay.
So again, we did edit a little bit of that, but nothing that Alex, but any Alex words that are on there. Even you could catch some of the background stuff. He's explaining to the woman in the Nissan Rogue, I can hear him say, I was getting a flat tire. He's like, he's telling her the story in the background. And then he tells her again, the 911 operator, she's like, are you going to drive to the hospital? No, flat tire. Does not anybody remember my story about the flat tire? How about the bullet in your head, Alec?
Definitely telling himself that
we
again.
We don't mean to laugh, but it just
he's talking to it. I know it's just bizarre, as are so many things with this whole Murdoch mess.
And
but
he's so, like, and he was in the tragedy of the homicides too, when he called 911 of his wife and son. Very Southern polite with a yes sir, no sir, yes ma'am, no ma'am, all the way through.
I mean,
this.
I might be like, I've been bleeping, shot yes. in the bleeping head. I mean, he
even hear him say to the woman in the rogue, I don't want to get this all over your car.
Right. He says yes ma'am to the operator many times. He's very calm on both of these 911 calls.
He knows what, well, in this case, he knows that it was all a setup thing. I assume he thinks he's not dying, I would assume.
The only thing we don't really find out from the 911 calls is we know that there was an air ambulance that came and picked him up and took him to the Savannah Memorial Hospital. And we don't know the details of exactly how that happened. I'm thinking it's something when they assessed him in the ambulance that they made that decision. I mean, he was headed to Hampton Hospital, which is not a level one trauma center. So if they felt he needed a level one trauma center, he would either go to MUSC or Savannah.
Yes. Okay, so let's go to our ER doctor. Alex, medical records made in the hours after the September 4th shooting where he claimed he was being shot, and we went through that. The records were released to Alex's attorneys, who then released him to the State, which is a newspaper, the Island Packet newspaper, and Beaufort Gazette newspaper. Harpootlian, Dick Harpootlian, and Jim Griffin gave those outlets the records. And they aren't full records, but they are partial records. And so we wanted to get a take of an ER doctor on what his take on these was. Introduce us to our physician.
Yes, we have Dr. Dan Brown. He's been an ER doctor in the state of South Carolina for over 20 years, and we just thought it would be best to bring on an expert to help us break down these medical records. Welcome, Dr. Brown, and I think, Matt, you've got the first question.
So I assume you've seen the report that was released by Alec Murdoch's attorneys. What jumps out at you when you read that report?
Well, it's not a report. I've got four pages selected out of a a medical record that's apparently much longer than that.
I think that is important to note that they've released only selected portions of it. So obviously they're going to release the portions that are benefiting them the most.
So yeah, well, Dick Harpootlian said that they couldn't get all the records. At one point, he said he couldn't get them all for some reason. So anyway, out of those four pages, what do you notice?
Well, there's quite a bit here. You know, the paramedics on scene noted that there were two wounds on the top of the head and described what Mr. Murdaugh, related to them about what happened to him. When he arrived in the emergency department, he was placed in a trauma bay as a level one trauma, evaluated there. The evaluation included a plain film skull x-ray that was read and interpreted as negative. And then he had a follow-up CT scan of the brain that revealed injuries consistent with a gunshot wound to the head.
Well, one thing, question I had is, how is the protocol with, if someone is coming in, are they automatically classified as a level one, or does that happen when they get to the hospital?
No, that happens based on the information received before arrival. So typically, if a patient is in transport, there's a call over the radio to a physician in the emergency department. And information is relayed about the mechanism and nature of the injury, the status of the patient. And based on that, a decision is made whether to alert the full trauma or to activate the full level one trauma system, which would involve having people paged, available and ready to go if it's a level one trauma. But that's all done based on information that's received prior to the patient's arrival.
Okay, you said that the wound was consistent with a gunshot. Does that mean the bullet went through the skull or like skimmed off the skull or what does that mean?
Yeah, apparently in this case, the bullet entered the scalp from behind the patient, did enough damage to the skull to cause a skull fracture and to even reflect some bony particles forward. And then the bullet exited, towards the front of the patient, but also did enough damage to the brain or, you know, to the area around the brain to cause bleeding in the subdural space and the subarachnoid space. So he had intracranial bleeding as well.
So it completely went through.
The bullet itself never apparently penetrated through the skull.
Okay. So is that the reason why he was able to, Matt, do you want to do the timeline? A lot of people have questioned how quickly the injury occurred versus when he got out of the hospital. It seemed like it was a pretty quick time frame.
So Saturday was the shooting and taken by medevac away, and then Monday released.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me at all. I know that there's been some questions raised about why he was placed in the ICU and then why released so quickly. In my experience, the way he was managed was exactly per protocol and exactly the way I would have managed him under this setting. He came in, you know, any patient that we get a call in that has had a gunshot wound to the head, that mechanism alone is enough to make them a level one trauma. You know, the expectation is that could do a lot of harm, and we want to be ready, to manage that and have the people there available and ready to do it. So a level one trauma would have been called, that system would have been activated. In this particular case, he was an extremely lucky individual in the sense that the bullet did not actually penetrate through the skull, although it did fracture his skull and cause some underlying bleeding. So the a very appropriate way to manage that would have been to put him in the ICU. They ordered Q1 hour neuro checks, which is appropriate to make sure he doesn't deteriorate. He didn't have enough blood there to necessitate that it be surgically evacuated. So he was placed, watched, had a repeat CT scan done apparently to make sure that the bleeding remained stable. He was watched for a couple of days. He remained stable and then discharged.
Now, so the bullet, okay, just to double check, the bullet did not go through the skull. It just did the damage. It might have knocked like a chip of the skull into the brain or something.
Actually, it didn't knock a chip into the brain necessarily. It did crack the skull. The bony fragments are actually on the opposite side, on the skin side rather than the brain side. But you could get hit in the head and, nothing penetrate your brain. You know, if somebody hits you in the head with a hammer, they might not even fracture your skull. Nothing penetrate your skull, but you could do a lot of damage to the tissue underneath still. A bullet is a high velocity projectile that carries with it a lot of force and can do damage to tissue that it doesn't actually penetrate through. So, having that the bleeding there that's noted with the skull fracture, the two wounds that were initially thought to be two separate gunshot wounds by the paramedics on scene turned out to be an entry and an exit wound. That's all very consistent to me.
I'm getting confused because you say an entry and exit, but it didn't enter the skull.
It didn't penetrate the skull, but it penetrated the scalp.
Oh, okay.
So
that's where I was getting confused.
It entered the scalp from behind.
Gotcha.
At the area, you know, that we call the parietal bone, which is the bone on the very top of your head, entered the scalp, did damage to the skull, did damage to the tissue under the skull, including some bleeding into spaces around the brain, and then exited back out through the scalp towards the patient's front or face.
Okay, now it makes sense.
Well, let's describe the situation that Eddie Smith described with his attorney. I guess when Smith says that he showed up to help Alec out, he wasn't aware. He'd done some handyman work for him. He shows up, and Alec is asking him to shoot him in the head, and he says he did not want to shoot him in the head, so they kind of scuffle for the gun. He was trying to get the gun away from him. The gun did go off while he was wrestling the gun away from him. Says the gun did go off and ricocheted off the car, but did not hit him. So is it possible that this ricocheted bullet did in fact hit him?
Yeah, there's no way that I can, based on these four pages of medical records, give an opinion about whether this was a ricocheted bullet or not. I mean, this could have been a bullet fired directly at him, or it could have been a bullet that ricocheted off of something. We don't actually have the bullet itself. You know, the bullet wasn't retained in his tissue. So I have nothing to go on as far as, expressing an opinion about that.
Is it possible, like, how quickly does a guy bleed when something like that happens? Okay, so it quickly happens. I tussle with somebody gets shot, and then I just grab the gun and I leave, and I'm looking at him face to face. And obviously you said he was hitting the back of the head. Is there blood gushing immediately, or is it like a little delay, or any way to tell?
Usually, I mean, the scalp is very vascular, so it tends to bleed. There wouldn't have been, any real delay. It's not like, you fall off your bike and skin your knee, and then you see that little white area, and then, suddenly then, capillary blood fills that up. And, when you're a kid falling off your bike, it wouldn't have been like that. This would have bled, but not necessarily a whole lot. The paramedics told the air ambulance service that they thought that it was a small caliber weapon. The air ambulance service made a note in their record that they didn't know what the EMS team was basing that opinion on, but the two wounds could have been quite small depending on the caliber of the weapon.
Would you shave somebody's head when that happened, like that spot or anything?
Yeah, because let's tell Dan, like, when the just how many days after this accident did he appear in court for the bond hearing?
It was 12 days.
Okay, so 12 days after he was shot, he appears in court for his bond hearing. And he has absolutely no visible wound, nothing was shaved, there's no Band-Aid. So I think at this point, public outcry was like, wait, this does not make any sort of sense.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me either. I mean, if he had two wounds on the top of his head, the wounds on his scalp could have been fairly small. They would not have shaved his head. We actually stopped, even for pretty significant scalp wounds that we have to repair. We've stopped shaving heads. Some studies have shown that you actually increase the risk of infection if you shave close to the skin because of micro abrasions. So even if we have to repair, we get some pretty nasty scalp injuries. Typically we'll take a pair of scissors and just trim the hair away enough, to get to the wound.
Gotcha.
To repair it, but we don't shave heads anymore. Wow. And, or at least close. I mean, we don't shave them close to the skin. And these, I don't have enough of the record here to know whether they put some staples or sutures in those wounds or not. But he was bandaged on scene. I think that the air ambulance team removed those bandages and then replaced them while he was en route. They noted the wound to be hemostatic at that time, meaning it wasn't actively bleeding. And the I know that in the emergency department he was hemostatic, so he wasn't. He by that time he wasn't even bleeding.
Oh, wow.
In the ER.
I think the only other thing we need to cover is his attorneys also in this 4-page report gives the toxicology report, and he is positive for barbiturates and opioids. And I think they're kind of presenting this as proof that he did have, I don't know if that's why they're presenting it, but that's the information they gave as maybe possible proof that he did have this alleged opioid addiction.
Is that normal to do a drug test, or is that something maybe they requested, or what?
No, that's pretty standard, you know, for a trauma patient that comes in like that. There's a trauma panel of labs that just automatically get drawn, and a urine drug screen would have been included in that.
Did his numbers look? Are the numbers on there?
I didn't see them. Is that proof that he? I know it would be proof that he has an addiction, but is that proof that he did
pretty high?
That he had taken opioids prior to this incident?
No, actually, he was given fentanyl in the helicopter on the ride he was complaining of head pain. So fentanyl is an opiate that could have made hit, you know, this urine drug screen positive all by itself. So it's impossible based on the drug screen to know whether or not he had taken extrinsic opioids, whether he had some other opioid in his system prior to this incident. But he also does test positive for barbiturates. And he was not, as far as I know, based on just these, you know, 4 pages, I don't see evidence that he was administered a barbiturate before his urine drug screen was collected.
And a barbiturate could be a sleeping pill of some sort.
Yeah. So barbiturates are they're sedative, anxiolytic medications used for a lot of things. To treat anxiety, to treat, they're included in some headache medications, commonly used to treat seizure disorders, but also drugs of abuse. They are abused. Phenobarbital is a real common, commonly used and abused barbiturate. Fiorcet, which is prescribed for headaches and migraine headaches, has barbiturates in it. And, that's a drug that gets abused. So it's certainly a drug of abuse, and used that way, opiates as well. But again, in this case, he was administered the fentanyl in the helicopter. So it's just not possible for me to know whether that, whether we're seeing the fentanyl or whether, there was also something else. It doesn't rule something else out, but it does cloud that picture some. And it's important to note that this is a qualitative screen. So they actually published the cutoff levels, immediately above the results. If you have less than that cutoff level, it's going to be listed as negative on the screen. If you have above that, it's going to be listed as positive. But beyond that, they're not measuring an amount. So you don't know how much barbiturate is present, except that it's over the threshold of 200 nanograms per milliliter for this particular test. And you don't know how much opiates are involved, except that it's above the cutoff for this test, which is 300 nanograms per milliliter. So all this is saying is just yes or no, it's present, but not how much is present.
Wow. Oh, hey, one more question. I know when I was on the Educated Debutante the other night, they mentioned, several people, I think she actually mentioned, that could these records be not legit? Would they, could someone...
Could they fake it or something?
Yeah, could they fake these records?
Well, if somebody faked these, they were really good at it. Because they've included details that I don't think anybody other than a trauma physician would think to include. But also that would be a very simple thing to confirm or not. I mean, the address of the hospital is right on these records. If these are faked, the hospital, I'm sure, would disown them.
Well, you were fantastic. I mean, this is a great insight into everything.
Yeah, very informative for those of us who are not medical.
Okay. You had mentioned that you had a question about the impact of COVID.
A lot of people also said about COVID, you know, that hospitals are full, and how could he possibly get a bed in the ICU with, you know, COVID flaring right now?
Yeah, well, fortunately, you know, there have been isolated incidents in the United States where COVID has filled up ICUs to the point where there are literally no beds. And that does happen. I mean, that, you know, even without COVID, I've been in ERs where we've had to board patients in the ER waiting for an ICU bed to become available. That happens a lot. But fortunately, we have, in general, been able to still take care of everybody that needs to be taken care of in this country. And it's so somebody who's been shot in the head and needs an ICU bed would very likely have been able to get one. The fact that he was put in the ICU just, you know, during COVID is not in and of itself anything to raise any questions or concerns in my mind.
Good. Thank you, Dr. Brown. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, this has been very insightful for those of us who are not medical. We appreciate it. And thanks again for coming on.
Absolutely. Happy to do it.
Thank you. That was cool. I liked that interview. It gave us some real insight that I haven't seen a lot of places.
No, I definitely think it's important to talk to professionals who understand better than just a regular person.
Right, just us. We're regular people. We also want to tell you about the Stephen Smith benefit that's going on.
Yes, it's going to be in Columbia, South Carolina on October 30th. And you can find out information about that event on their Facebook page, which is Standing for Stephen. We also have a link on our Facebook page, which is Murdoch Podcast.
And once again, you want to thank your friends over at the Facebook page where you do the Facebook Live stuff.
Yes, Tales of the Educated Debutante. So we addressed some of the questions that we got from listeners to that the other night. So hopefully people found it informative.
There you go. Murdoch Podcast is where you can hit us up on Facebook with any comments you may have. And thanks again. We are always grateful, and we just aim to get justice for all those involved.